Yep.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin' on Lending. It's November 15th, 2010. My gosh, what is going on with this week? Next week is already Thanksgiving, and you know what that means. It's just a quick countdown, and we're right out to that ball dropping at New Year's, and it'll be here and upon us so fast. But we appreciate you being here with us each and every week. I want to point out to you all the couple things to make sure you go out and register for this program. By going to Lickin' on Lending, www.lickinonlending.com, and in that website, you will be able to register for notification of upcoming programs. We're fortunate today to have two outstanding guests with us, and very, very fortunate to have these two gentlemen with us, Paul Peters, as well as Vaughn Pearson. We're going to be talking about banks. What is the best environment for a mortgage banker to be involved in? Banking is an increasing option for many, many out there, and we're going to be discussing about that in the Hot Topics segment. But as we do each and every week, we're going to start right off by getting into interest rates. Joe Farr, what's going on in the market?
Hey, Dave. Markets are down today. Started out down a lot, down about 0.75 points, but have since recovered. And a lot of what drove the early morning drop seems to have related to QE2, but this time in a bad way. You know, QE2 has been a big driver of MBS prices, mortgage rates, both in a positive way over the anticipated announcement and then immediately following. Since the announcement, though, things have kind of gone south as it relates to mortgage rates. Over the weekend, there was a lot of pressure building about the quantitative easing program from both politicians, which shouldn't be included in the discussion about Fed policies, but yeah, they are inserting themselves, economists and around the world. So, excuse me, we'll watch to see how all that plays out, and I'll talk a little bit about it in the talk about last week as well, because it has been the driving force. So this morning, after the early drop, retail sales came out, and to a surprise, it was very much stronger than expected. But when you pull out the auto portion of it, it was pretty much right as expected. And then soon thereafter, New York Empire State Index came out much weaker than expected. So those two things, one, you know, retail sales being pretty much as expected and the Empire State Index being lower than expected and following a very quick and very long drop in prices, we've seen a bit of a recovery. And to be quite honest, some people have probably seen favorable price changes today. It's just still that they're down about 7/32 on the day. So it's been crazy, been volatile.
Last week was some volatility as well, wasn't there?
Oh, we had one less day since things were closed on Thursday, but we saw three price sheets on Friday, three price sheets on Tuesday or Wednesday, I don't remember which, and the other 2 days had multiple price sheets. So yeah, it has been a crazy wild week. There's a lot of confusion created by timing of how you measure prices, and when things are as volatile as they are now, things like Freddie Mac made the announcement on Friday that that mortgage rates hit an all-time low, and you know that's what the consumer hears, and that's what's all in the news being talked about in the paper. But if you compare Friday prices to Friday prices the day before, MBS prices were down a full 1%. Mortgage rates are higher if you measure Friday to Friday. And what's so confusing is that Freddie Mac's measure comes from a survey that's conducted on like Monday and Tuesday, with the results coming together on Thursday for an announcement, usually on Thursday. But since this week was a holiday on Thursday, they came out on Friday. So, you know, a lot of your customers out there are reading about that, but you can tell them that MBS prices and mortgage rates are, in fact, up over last week and certainly up over the lows of where they had been. Let's talk a little bit more about QE2. As I mentioned,
I really want to get into that discussion with you. It's so exciting, especially with you having a strong economic background and being a CPA. There's a lot of a discussion going on, and it now seems like there's been this was a good thing, and now there's anticipation this isn't such a good thing. Let's get into that.
Well, the results of the anticipated announcement were very good for the stock market, were very good for the mortgage market, and that the expectation of big demand for long-term fixed-rate investments was enough to drive prices up on both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. But what's happened is, and the consequence of the announcement to add a bunch of dollars in the money supply, was that the value of the dollar against foreign currency has gone down. It went down in anticipation of the announcement and has not improved any. And as a result, you know, foreign investors are reconsidering whether they want to invest their money in U.S. denominated investments, as they fear the dollar continuing to slide. It really has an impact on their yield. So there's criticism coming from foreign investors. There's criticism coming from, you know, the new Republican Tea Party kind of big government's not good people.
There are
a lot of economists that are questioning whether the benefits of quantitative easing, this new program, are greater than the risks, and certainly the risks are that inflation will become uncontrollable down the road. So with all that,
that's really the biggest discussion I've heard is the overall fear that we've gone from a fear of that there was a possibility of having deflation, having to find ourselves in a deflation environment. Now it's like we may have runaway inflation as a result
of that.
And the unintended consequences of the cure to what ails us is sometimes we find out later worse than what we were trying to fix.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to get on.
Well, some people are calling for the Fed to suspend their program. They announced $600 billion purchase, and I don't think that's going to happen. It's not like the Fed to do things unless there were a significant improvement in economic announcement over the next that 8-month time period. So don't look for them to suspend, but certainly there is a lot of reason for investors to be skeptical that any more might happen. And a lot of people initially thought that this was the down payment. You know, this was the initial QE2 announcement, the $600 billion, and that there'd be more to come. Well, you know, with all the complaining going on now, I think investors are sort of backing off of that expectation, which is a lot of the reason why we're seeing things turn around a little bit today with prices falling.
Interesting.
So, you know, it will create add to continued volatility, I think, is the safest thing to say. And, you know, I think that we've probably seen the low rates. You know, the pressures now are going to be to the higher side, I think.
That is probably – how does that bode well when we have a housing industry that is not yet recovered, Joe? We have a economy that has not recovered. It does not seem to help. So is it more of a lower pattern? We've seen the low, but we're not going to see a spike in interest rates? Or is it just we're at the lows and we're going to be staying here for a while? What any sense on that?
Well, My thought is that a 4% interest rate on a mortgage is outstanding, but does a 5% interest rate keep you from buying a home if you're ready to buy a home? The answer to that's no.
Yeah.
I don't see it moving a whole lot higher quickly, but I also don't see interest rates being a deterrent to buying a home. Clearly, any increase in rates makes it harder for somebody to stretch their ratios to buy maybe as much as they want. But, interest rates are still going to be favorable for an active home buying. It's just, will jobs accommodate? Will prices be, will home prices level out so there'll be no expectation to further falling prices? So, interesting times in the mortgage world.
That is for sure. This week, what do we have coming up? Retail sales, I know today.
Up? We have some pretty important measures. We have CPI on Wednesday, PPI tomorrow, and industrial production tomorrow. Clearly, QE2 is not going to have an impact on prices yet. But we have seen with the drop in the dollar, we've seen a run up in some of the commodity prices. So. Yeah, we may start to see a little movement in the inflation numbers, not to scary high numbers, but we'll see an improvement higher. Not an improvement, a move higher.
And so
the last thing is we have housing starts coming out on Wednesday and Philly Fed coming out on Thursday. So it's a pretty important week with retail sales already, CPI and PPI. Pretty important week. Should continue to see some volatility.
Yeah, I think we're going to be expecting that for the foreseeable future. Folks, you need to have a service like MBS Quote Line. Joe, thank you so much for you and your team bringing us this data and these data points and this commentary each and every week. So valuable. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin'.
Hello, everybody. Good to have you back with us. It is Monday, the 15th of November. Getting close. We're crouching in on Turkey Day that day. We're supposed to give thanks for all that's going on. This has been an amazing year. And we have so much to be grateful for. It's also been one of those, as Joe was just saying, volatile year in interest rates and more of that in the foreseeable future. And my gosh, talk about, there doesn't seem like there's be a lot to be thankful for when it comes to the regulation. We've gotten more than we've ever bargained for on that. And bringing us on a pre-recorded segment, Alice is out celebrating a family function today, and she's out of the office, so she was kind enough to go into the studio and record some comments for us. Alice, what do you have for us related to the legislative update?
Thanks, Dave. And as always, I am here to bring you the legislative update, winding our way through traffic. First on our list of House bills is H.R. 6133. The title of the bill is Prompt Decision for Qualification of Short Sale Act. So what this means is that it would require servicers to respond to purchase offers on homes that happen to be a short sale offer. So in other words, the borrower owes $100,000 on the house and the offer's coming in for $80,000 or $90,000. The bill is trying to require that a servicer respond in no less than 45 days. Now, that's a challenge. I don't know if you can regulate what's going on in the market. So we'll see if this one gets any legs. Right now, the status of this is it's just been introduced, doesn't have any legs to it. Another bill we're watching, H.R. 6322, make permanent the PMI tax deduction. Now, I think we're all in favor of this, and we would love to see that extension extended. All this is right now is a bill that's been introduced. We don't have any activity on it right now. Another bill that's just introduced, H.R. 6260, sale of real property, and it would prohibit homeowners association from charging transfer taxes this made the press a little bit because people were learning that developers who built the project, say, 2, 3, 4 or more years ago, put clauses in the master deed and the bylaws that would say they are paid a fee every time ownership transfers within a unit within the project. Now, this is years later, and they're still getting compensation for transfer of ownership in the sales. A lot of people think that some of these fees are egregious, that homeowners may not have been aware of this, and so there's several pieces working within this bill. It's phrased as an all-out prohibition. That's what's going to keep this thing from moving very far. It is just simply now, as a House bill that's been introduced, it's going to take a lot of work to refine the wording so that legitimate homeowner association transfer fees could still be charged. So that one we just have on the radar because it does have a hot button area where there's a little bit of abuse on one front of that. Also on the watch list is H.R. 3421. This actually passed the House back in September. It's the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It would exclude medical debt from your credit report. And again, like I mentioned, it passed the House September 21st. It also had a Senate bill, companion bill. So this really is in Senate committee now to try and get worked out. Not a lot of attention to it being focused in a lame duck session since it's not really a high, hot button issue. So passed the House and passed the Senate, but, you know, we're not sure where it's going to go from there. Also on our rules list is the multiple parts that are starting to come out on Dodd-Frank. Now, of course, I still want to remind you of some of the other pieces that we're watching that have due dates that are coming up in November. Now, if you remember, in the rules process, we're always dealing with comment periods that we have to be very cognizant of. So I'm going to remind you, November 15th is when the comment period closes for the change in the advertising rules. Check this out. For those of you who do a lot of web advertising or who also do a lot of maybe telemarketing or print-based or TV-based advertising, you'll want to check all the restrictions on what you're allowed or not allowed to say. So this is a comment period due to expire in the next week. Also, comment periods close on November 23rd for Regulation Docket 1366. This is our period of looking at the new TIL form. This is going to require a table in the middle of the truth in lending form that's going to break out all the payment information for adjustable rate mortgages. And I think the key question everyone has to ask is, are your system providers going to be ready on time? Remember, it might seem easy to just, put on a table and that's not going to really change too much. I don't know if I care about the look of the form. It's more about the data behind it with showing worst-case scenario, now what's happening to the APR on the form, making sure programming for other parts of the form don't get mixed up. So it's really an IT issue, so get in there and respond if you think it's just a simple fact of we need more time to be able to implement this form. And the last thing I want to make sure everyone has on their radar is the lender insurance program changes that FHA is proposing. These comments are due by December 7th. FHA is proposing to change how your compare ratio is looked at. They will be looking at today, the way they look at it, is that if you are a multi-state lender, you're compared to the national default rate. If you're a single-state lender, you are compared to that state's default rate. If a mortgagee is in a state with a real high default rate, this gives them a little bit of an advantage. So you want to be able to take a look at the numbers and say, well, if I'm in a range of states that have real high default rates as a whole in multiple states, and now I'm being compared to the national average, which might be lower than most of my states, then am I now going to see that I have a challenge becoming a part of the lender insurance program? For those of you who may not be familiar, FHA's lender insurance program means you don't have to send every single case binder in for insuring. It's a big operational savings for lenders to be a part of that program, but they have to keep their compare ratio in line and keep it at or below 150% of the average rates in the states and where the mortgagee operates, is what this proposed rule has. So you need to really crunch your own numbers and see how this is going to work for you. That's it for the legislative update. Back to you, Dave.
Boy, Alice, thank you so much. When it comes to this, it's that stay informed and you stay in business. Sleep on the switch and you'll be out of business. I mean, you cannot, folks, be missing what's going on. There are so many critical initiatives, and we value. I see so many people dialed in and listening on the to the program, dialed in, and also a good, huge number of people listening on a streaming basis. We thank you each and every week for coming to us. And remember, this week on this program, we're focusing on banking. Should you affiliate with a bank? Boy, we've got two experts, Paul Peters as well as Vaughn Pearson, that are going to be discussing that in great detail. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. We bring you updated information each and every week of what's going on in the industry. And one of the things that we need to focus on is the importance of making money. So each and every week we bring the profit doctor on to fix that bottom line, fix what ails you. And we seem to be having some folks out. Andy as well is out of the office dealing with some client issues and helping a number of our clients be more profitable. So he pre-recorded his comments, and we're going to bring on Andy Schell. Andy?
Well, thanks, Dave. I'm sorry that I can't be there with you live today, but it is great to be here with you now in digital form. The subject of today's Profit Doctor is, which bank is which? It gets confusing to talk about banks when one is an FDIC bank and the other is a mortgage bank. You know, which bank is which? So let's use the HUD definition. HUD defines banks and credit unions that are regulated by various other agencies, in addition to HUD, as supervised lenders. They are supervised by the other federal agencies. Mortgage banks are considered non-supervised lenders. Just to give you a little bit of background, I spent 20 years working for various supervised mortgage lenders, including Bank of America in California, where I ran correspondent lending, hedge settlements, and loan accounting. And besides B of A, I worked for several other supervised lenders as CFO. And I've also worked for non-supervised mortgage companies as CFO and president. So the point of all this is I've been CFO of both supervised and non-supervised mortgage lenders, which gives me a unique perspective on the good and the bad of both. What does it mean to be supervised? As a supervised lender, you are examined by teams of people who come from the FDIC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is the OCC, the Office of Thrift Supervision, which is the OTS, or other state banking regulators, depending upon your charter. Now, these examiners will come in groups of three or more, I've seen 15, 20, even 30, come to your office with little or no notice and stay for weeks, using one of your conference rooms or your boardrooms to do their work while they look at anything they want to look at, including all of your HR records, your various loan files, your accounting records, your policies, your board minutes, your compensation plans, your compensation payments, and they'll interview the staff. And as they go through all these records, they'll start interrupting meetings to ask you questions about what they find, and their job is to find something. Their job security depends on them finding something, so they will find something. Then they'll create a report that lists all their findings, and they'll send it off to Washington, D.C., to the Home Office of the Regulators. And then they'll expect you to respond to each and every allegation they find. Now, this exam can take weeks or even months, and your response to them can take weeks or even months. and then they're going to bill you for the time they spent looking at your stuff, and then they're going to return in just a few more months. Usually they come in every 12 to 18 months. Here's the really key point. If the findings are bad, people get fired. And if the findings are really bad, the regulators can take over the company, force a merger with another company, and ban management from ever working in banking again. So this is a really, really big stick to ensure compliance. You know, most mortgage banks who are non-supervised lenders have no idea about a federal examination and the kind of direct and extensive oversight supervised lenders have to deal with. So you may be asking the question, why would anybody put up with this? Well, one big answer is almost free cost of funds. Having a 5-point warehouse spread and access to as much cash as you want and never having to worry about payroll is a good thing. People really like that. It's kind of like I've used the analogy from the movie Aladdin. In the movie Aladdin, the genie with the voice of Robin Williams has unlimited cosmic power, but also has these handcuffs and is forced to live in little bitty living space. So that's like a supervised lender. You've got access to the Federal Home Loan Bank and the Federal Reserve and direct access to Fed wires, and you can raise money by offering deposit rates to customers, and you can borrow from all these other sources. So you have access to amazing funding capacity, but you're very restricted in how you can use that money because you're directly regulated by the federal examiners who have extensive teeth in how they do what they do. So why is all this important? You know, how does this relate to ROI or tie back to the profit doctor? Well, here, think about this. It's common knowledge that it takes mortgage finance to drive housing. We all agree with that. People are not going to buy houses with cash. It is also known that mortgage banks can generate a return on an investment well above 30%. We have some clients with 40, 50, 60% return on investment. So now then, to generate a high return, 30, 40, 50% return on investment, there's an assumption of risk that's implicit in the investments. Mortgage banks are not known to follow the rules very well, which generates risk to an investor. If someone is looking to invest in a mortgage bank so they can get a 30% return on their money, they also know that mortgage banks have in the past not followed the rules very well. Many, many failed because of repurchase risk, which is at its core not following the rules. So FDIC banks are much more likely to follow the rules. They have really significant consequences for not following the rules. Supervised lenders have to submit monthly financials to the government every month on time, and these reports include lots of detail like profit per loan, and if the financials are wrong, people get fired. At many mortgage banks, they can't produce a monthly financial statement that's even accurate. So if an investor is looking to invest money, which group is less risky? The supervised lenders are less risky. So if you're an investor looking for an IPO and you see the ROI of mortgage lending and you see the safety of a supervised mortgage lender, then that's what you're looking for. That will be where you can put your money to work, get exceptional returns, and still have the safety of a regulated depository. That's why more and more the focus is for banks to pick up mortgage lending operations. Now, got to remember, this combination can work, but it's difficult. A supervised mortgage lender, an FDIC bank in mortgage lending, will typically have the mentality of an order taker and will not generate the ROI. It takes the structure of a non-supervised lender carefully being placed inside of a supervised lender framework to produce the exceptional results. Still a huge clash of culture to resolve between supervised and non-supervised lenders. The FDIC banks need the entrepreneurial focus of the mortgage banks, and the mortgage bank needs the structure and control of the FDIC bank. If they can work together to pull the best from both together, the result will be a company with capital running to invest in it. Well, and that's the Profit Doctor for today. Thanks.
Excellent. Hey, Mr. Andy, we appreciate you bringing this to us each and every week. There's so much to be considering when you look at making the decision whether or not to affiliate with a bank. Or if you're a banker looking at to bring in a mortgage operation. Boy, we got two guests in our next segment, Paul Peters and Vaughn Pearson. They're going to break it all down for us and really get into the details. And they've got years of experience, as you'll hear. You'll want to stay tuned for the next segment. We'll be right back after this brief break.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar DataTrack.
The main news that caught my attention this week was another posting from Chris Martinson at www.chrismartinson.com. He dives into the impact the Fed's announcement of monetizing our national debt could have on the global economy. The title of the posting starts with the word alert, which is code speak from Chris that the content of the story will have a significant impact on your life. Yikes. In part one, he lays out how the first round of qualitative easing rescued our banking system, but that in this new round of QE, we are simply printing money to cover our debt. As such, we are now embarking down a path that has never ended well for countries in the past. What's more important, however, is the information he includes in part two of this posting. You need to be a subscriber to access this, and it might just be worth forking out some money to read what he has to say. Essentially, Chris combines the dismal outlook of what QE2 will do to the value of our dollar, combined with the inevitable spike in energy prices due to the combination of growing demand with dwindling supplies in oil, and recommends some prudent planning on each of our parts. I realize the story isn't mortgage specific, but it struck quite a chord with me when I read it, and I feel compelled to share it with you all. In mortgage news, MP McQuinn posted a story at Wall Street Journal about how community banks are wishing to do more portfolio jumbo loans, but can't because Fannie and Freddie are keeping max loan levels as high as $729,000 in some spots around the country. Those higher loan limits were extended an extra year recently, and until I read this article, I thought that was a good thing. Now, I understand better how it is really a mixed issue depending on your business model. You can find this story called On Jumbo Markets, Government Muscles Out Banks at blogs.wsj.com. Those were the stories that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar DataTrack, online at dmdinc.com.
Hey, everybody. That is so good. Rob Katz, I know you come back and listen to these programs after you pre-record those, but those are excellent. Those are excellent stories. Great job. I just shout out to you for doing a good job of picking out some of the news that didn't make the program or that didn't make the show. Folks, we are so fortunate to have two guests with us that really understand banking and understand it from the inside and have lived in that environment. Paul Peters, his 34-year career in banking, mortgage banking, and most recently he was president of a major bank-owned loan origination and servicing operation that was active in 42 states, generating over $7.5 billion in annual production. Folks, this was a big company. Paul, I'll let you introduce whether or not you want the name of the company mentioned in there. Also, Paul was involved with Fannie Mae's National Housing Advisory Council, and he was on the National RESBOG, or the Residential Board of Governors, for the MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. He's got a number of credits. He's involved in his community, very involved. He has a Bachelor of Degree of Finance, and he also is a Certified Mortgage Banker, a CMB. I'm so excited to have from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Paul Peters with us. Paul, good to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. It's great to be on your program today.
Well, I also want to introduce Vaughn Pearson, who's up in the Dallas area. He's a 35-year veteran, just one more year than Paul. And he has been a chief lending officer, a chief credit officer in the Dallas and a number of Dallas area banks. And he has operated in that capacity or as a chief lending officer for over 25 years. More recently, he's been involved with the FDIC as leading on the he's a leading advisor on asset liquidation on failed banks, and he leads several of the teams there doing that. He's a frequent speaker at RMA, the Risk Management Association, and if anyone's in banking, they know that that is the one association they're going to for getting information as to what, how to run a bank, how to operate a bank. So he's also has a BA, Bachelor of Arts, not to be confused with the bank, but he has a Bachelor of Arts from Duke University and an MBA from Tulane. My goodness, so good to have you on the program with me, Vaughn. And Paul, let's get into the first line of questions. I'm going to start off with a question off to Paul. What are the potential advantages to a bank of having a residential mortgage division or a mortgage company, Paul? And you certainly would know. You've been in that world.
Well, absolutely, Dave. But, you know, there are advantages both ways to the mortgage originator or broker and to the bank. And And looking at it from the perspective of the originator or the broker, affiliating with a bank may open them to greater sources of data that they can solicit referrals from. That bank normally tries to mine their database and to include the mortgage origination piece in that database mining. And then there's the issue of more bank branch referrals as they endorse a larger mortgage unit within that bank. From the bank standpoint, most banks today consider a mortgage, a residential mortgage, as one of their staple consumer products. And they use that relationship with that pleased mortgage client to cross-sell their other products within the bank. And also they use it as a customer retention tool to keep their competitors from pirating those customers from that bank.
And it's so important that we bring that out, is that there are a lot of reasons why banks do get into this other than just the fee income and the income that comes from mortgage division. I mean, mortgage banking divisions are very profitable inside of banks. Vaughn, I know you've seen this to be the case, and any one thing you want to add to that comment or to those questions, to that question?
Well, there are several things, Dave. Especially community banks are very active in seeking new revenue sources, because so many of them have been very dependent on commercial real estate types of transactions. I'd say that the overall mortgage industry today, because of a higher quality of more traditional loans that are being made, are very intriguing to banks, specifically because the asset quality issue, which is one of the things that Andy Schell mentioned just a couple of minutes ago. And, of course, those are critical issues as far as banks and what their primary concerns are. If you think about it, Andy Schell talked about the inventory of banks. It's cash. So the banks are continually under pressure to utilize those cash in the form of making loans and investing in securities.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of things we're going to bring out in that, but a lot of people think, Vaughn, that that the advantage for a mortgage banker is that they have unlimited resources. There is a loan to borrower limit. There's ways around that. You and I are working with a client in a bank-owned mortgage company up in the Midwest area that was dealing with that, and we were able to help them, advise them around some of those issues. But, Vaughn, on the other side of the coin, what are the potential advantages for owners of a mortgage entity? And what are the advantages for them to be a part of, affiliated with, or be owned by a bank?
Well, you've got to think, Dave, that they have some significant ancillary resources. They've got strong marketing departments. They've got IT, a number of different areas that oftentimes can facilitate the creation of mortgages. They also have a very broad prospect base. If you stop to think about it, they've got depositors, they've got corporate customers, they've got corporate customers' employees, all of which represent an intriguing prospect base for the possibility of generating mortgage leads. They also have a lot of internal resources that can be referral areas. They've got branch managers, they've got tellers, they've got loan officers. This kind of leads back to one of the things that Paul was sharing just a minute or two ago. And they also have an excellent name identification that oftentimes can add a lot of credibility to mortgage functions.
Yeah, you know, I think about that. And, Paul, you certainly saw the advantages of going in and mining, so to speak, the data from within the existing customer base that, of the bank that may not have been involved with the bank or in a relationship with the bank as a result of the mortgage process. So did you find that to be a real advantage, Paul?
Well, absolutely, Dave. I actually joined a large bank back in the mid-90s. I actually affiliated my company with that bank, and one of the things that I found right away is that there were literally – hundreds of thousands of checking account, DDA account, savings account, trust account.
DDA, what's a DDA account? Let's explain that for our listeners.
Demand deposit account or checking
Good.
Account.
Thank you. Yep.
That as those statements were mailed out on a monthly basis, included in that statement was a solicitation for a mortgage loan. So my database that I had mined for years all of a sudden was expanded 10, 20, 30-fold as I affiliated myself with this bank, and it showed up in a much greater level of origination volume.
Well, I think it's really important. Your perspective is so unique, Paul, or so valuable, both of your perspective. But, I mean, the fact that you owned an independent mortgage company, you sold it into a bank, or you affiliated with a bank, and then that bank grew and that bank sold, and you ran one of the largest bank-owned mortgage companies in the country. It certainly is one of the largest ones, especially in the Southeast.
Well, it was a very large company in the Southeast, Southwest, and we competed favorably with a lot of the mega players out there.
Well, to say you competed favorably, you're being modest. I think you literally own certain markets. If I recall the stories about what you did before I got a chance to know you, I knew more of you than I did know you at that time. And so, but let's another guy that's experienced in our regular group of guests that we have is Joe Farr. Joe was also the president of a bank-owned subsidiary. And, Joe, you certainly have a unique perspective to all this. Jump into the discussion here, please.
Well, I've heard nothing but good stuff. Now let's throw out the stuff that's not so good. I wanted to get the other side of the question out on the table for our mortgage banking guys and sort of what's the downside of hooking up with a bank? And Paula, I guess I'll throw that to you first.
Well, there's the downside. Would be culture shock, Joe. One of the things that I think about is that bank really committed to the mortgage product? Are they committed to making mortgage a staple for their consumer products menu? And in some instances, the answer is yes. In some instances, they really don't know, because the mortgage product in today's environment, where we make our loans, originate those loans for sale in secondary markets, some of that is foreign in the eyes of banks. They really don't understand that. So it can be that uncertainty in the culture that can cause a problem. And then interpretation, bank quote unquote interpretation of the regulatory environment can also be a hurdle, in that some banks interpret the regulatory issues that are out there today much more aggressively, much more literally than others. So it can mean the difference where you're competitive as an independent and you're someone constrained as a bank-owned mortgage company.
Yeah, and it's a credit overlays, aren't you? Not really addressing there, Paul, that you're really talking about is, and that's what we're experiencing. If you're selling loans into a B of A or Wells Fargo, we're certainly dealing with the credit overlays. But now you may find yourself actually dealing with another serious credit overlays from a guy that has the job that Vaughn used to have. And Vaughn, I'd like to have you talk about that. What are banks talking about as far as credit overlays? I think Joe's question is just so important. What is the other side of the coin? Do you see a lot of chief credit officers, Vaughn, feeling the pressure to add credit overlays?
Absolutely, Dave. The issues from the lender standpoint, in this case a bank, is that they, especially if they are the originators themselves of the mortgages, they have to think in terms of their overall loan loss reserves. They think in terms of loan loss adequacy. So there are any number of issues that come in from the credit perspective, especially if a loan is retained within the overall portfolio. And what I'm seeing now industry-wide is a push towards additional lending activity that is not directly associated with commercial real estate transactions. Therefore, any number of my clients are very interested in adding mortgages, not only from the origination standpoint, but also from the retention standpoint. If indeed a bank is originating with the intent of reselling into a secondary market, then the issues can be very focused on the front-end process and making sure that it can be sold without recourse back to the originator, in this particular case, the bank. If indeed, however, it's retaining the mortgages over the longer term, and I do see a good bit of activity in that vein, then it's underwriting it for its own portfolio, which means that there's even more scrutiny to making sure that the original extension of credit is solid and its overall foundation is firmly established.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think there's three basic categories, if I'm not mistaken, that the mortgage division has to originate to. It's loans held for sale into the secondary markets. Those have to be moved off pretty quickly. Those are going to go under a lot more scrutiny, if I'm not mistaken, Vaughn. So I'm saying I'm revealing possibly some ignorance or some fine-tuning. But also there's a loans that can be held for a period of time, but they're not held for a long-term investment. But the third category is those loans that are held and never intended to be sold in the secondary markets. Is that still the case, those three categories?
Yes, that is correct. And there are certain balance sheet implications to each of those categories, how they're categorized, whether you have to mark to market, without getting into a lot of the technical details.
So
the bank then needs to understand that.
I think it's so important, Joe. You and I have talked about this, and you're so good about bringing all the market data out there. Joe, I think we listened to this, and did your bank actually get into finding the advantage of holding that product, or did you see that was just not something that was realistic? Should I guess the question, Joe, is should a mortgage originator go into a relationship thinking that, oh, great, I can now create all these new products, bring back some of those products that were problematic, and now have the bank hold them? Is that something realistic, Joe? I may have lost Joe there. Apologize for that. Anyway,
I'm here.
Throw that. Oh, you are? Okay, good.
I'm here.
All right.
I found, Dave, was the bank had a very specific need, and it was asset liability matching oriented. At the time it was not a negative thing to do, but the bank was very interested in owning Neg M monthly adjustable coffee arms. In retrospect, that probably wasn't a wise thing to do, but but it matched their asset liability needs, and therefore they wanted our mortgage company to produce those for their portfolio, which gave us a niche product, which was nice to have, especially out on the West Coast. But you're going to find that it's not an end-all and be-all. There are very high-level restrictions. There's asset liability requirements, capital requirements, return on capital requirements, that if that's why you're going there, go there with your eyes wide open. You're going to find that most of the loans that you make are still going to be sold in the secondary market.
That's a great point. Paul, did you see that as something? Because I know a lot of our listeners are out there and going, man, I never thought about this. We might be able to create some product for the portfolio. That is an advantage. Did you find that you took advantage of that bank advantage?
Well, absolutely. Somewhat the same answer as Joe just gave. Joe and Vaughn just gave. I mean, it was asset liability considerations. It was very much even – 3 or 4 years ago, it had much higher requirements on the credit and the collateral. And then there had to be the cross-sale aspect attached to that that mortgage client. We had to see a certain number of those mortgage loans result in cross-sales of checking accounts, savings accounts, HELOCs, and other products that the bank sold. To go into that type of lending without building relationships of multiple products sold to each customer, most banks just don't understand that single-sided mortgage relationship. They want more out of it than just the mortgage in their portfolio.
I think that's an interesting point. We're going to get more into that, especially there's a lot of considerations. And after we come back from a break, I'm going to go to Vaughn with something about the Dodd-Frank bill. It seems like a lot of people are saying, for the first time, an affiliation with a bank is going to make a lot more sense. We're going to come back with a question after the break to talk to Vaughn about it. We'll be right back.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI. Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. We have special guests Paul Peters and Vaughn Pearson, both veterans in the world of bank-owned mortgage companies. We're continuing our discussion. Vaughn, I want to ask you a question. What thought process do mortgage companies have to go through as they adjust a consideration in their consideration of affiliation with a bank? What adjustments have to be made? We started getting into it a little bit. Dodd-Frank, I know, is having an impact on it.
Yeah, so this links very nicely, Dave, back to some of the comments that Andy Schell made a little bit earlier. You've got to remember that the banking industry is highly regulated. And right now, there is a degree of uncertainty in the industry, part of which relates back to the July 21st passage of that financial reform under Dodd-Frank. Yeah. They're also being influenced by Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that's within the Federal Reserve. So right now, there are probably hundreds of detailed regulations that haven't yet been written. So the bankers are still having to deal with the uncertainty of exactly what the detailed rules are going to be under, for instance, the financial reform in Dodd-Frank.
Well, you know, I think, Paul, that's one of those things is that something that should keep people from moving towards that? You've had the experience of going both ways. Certainly you didn't have it all sorted out when you made the decision to affiliate. Even though there's some uncertainty that Vaughn just pointed out, Paul, is this something that we should find ourselves that should cause a mortgage banker to say, you know, I think I'm going to wait and see? What's your advice to the guy that might be saying, I'm on the fence, I'm going to stay on the fence?
Well, just make sure that bank is committed to the mortgage product, without a doubt. I mean, in every mortgage company and every bank I've talked to over the last year, they're concerned about two things. How do I make money? And am I regulatorily compliant? And lately, over the past 6 months, as Vaughn just pointed out, the first question is how do I make sure that I'm compliant in my operations? So that bank has got to have a committed view of going into the mortgage business, but also they've got to be able to interpret those rules so that they're comfortable with the outcome, and also so that outcome does not interrupt their mortgage origination activities.
That's good.
You know, moving forward, and there's a lot of this is yet to be interpreted in the next few months.
So we've got some things to be sorted out. Joe, I want you to get into a couple more questions for the sake of time. We got 6 minutes remaining in the program, and I've got about 15 minutes more material we want to bring you, our listeners. Joe, why don't you jump in here with an important question that I know you have on your mind.
Well, I'd go to, if you did hook up with a bank, you're a mortgage company and you hook up with a bank, what are they going to be most focused on? What
Great question.
To a mortgage company, it's sometimes too often it's just how much volume do I have, but what is the bank going to focus on as far as you being successful in working for them?
Well, this is Vaughn. Let me take a swing at that one for briefly. There are demands for high integrity standards, and those are going to be very closely scrutinized by the regulators. So that's going to be absolutely critical. There also needs to be an awareness from the mortgage organization standpoint of the types of customers that they're going to be dealing with, because they're dealing with somebody else's customers. So a service failure is going to have a wide potential impact. And then finally, they also may have to deal with a number of unimportant bank-specific activities that are part of their training regimen, forgery, compliance, deposit products, and all that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead. Joe, I want to see if you have anything you want to follow on. I want to get back to Paul on one important thing. One of the questions, so Joe, do you have anything else as a follow-on to that?
No, I think that to a bank, I agree, it's going to be reputation. You know, are you doing anything to hurt or help our reputation? If you're doing it to hurt our reputation, that's a big time problem. And then so little of it's going to be volume. So just set your sights based on the idea that the best measure is going to be a good return, but with outstanding. As Vaughn said, consumer interest and high ethical standards.
That is excellent. I want to go to Vaughn with a quick question, and then I want to go to Paul, have a quick response. We got to be really quick on our response to this. But one question that came in from a listener is, hey, if I know mostly small community banks in my area, how can I, if I affiliate with a small community bank, am I going to be able to compete against the mega banks? Vaughn, real quick.
Well, you may be talking about the overall quality of the bank, which is a CAMELS rating. Includes capital, asset quality, management, earnings, liquidity, sensitivity. So that's a good starting point.
Yeah, so one thing is to make sure the CAMELS, and that's an acronym for capital, asset quality, management, earnings, liquidity, and sensitivity. I love that. Folks, go back and listen to the program just to grab that. But Vaughn, to the point, is can small community banks compete with mega banks? Yes or no?
Absolutely, yes.
Paul?
Absolutely, especially in the area of the service environment, Dave, where they can move very, very quickly to make decisions, where larger banks are made by many, many committees upstream. Smaller banks can be more nimble and quick, and they can deliver that service more effectively to their customers in most cases.
Folks, we have so many questions and so much material to get to that the only way to really effectively get in and discuss this is to get a hold of one of these two gentlemen or both of them. Paul, if you would give them your contact information, how's the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you?
Mine's pretty easy. It's ppeters@mbs-team.com.
Paul Peters, ppeters@mbs-team.com. All right, Vaughn?
It'd be the same thing, vpearson@mbs-team.com.
Folks, we have run out of time as we look at the clock here. Dang, that clock just races. I think there's something our producer does, Andy Alvey, that just speeds up the clock when we start doing this program here. I don't know how it is, but time just seems to evaporate on us so quickly. I want to say a special thank you to Vaughn Pearson and Paul Peters for being on the program. Gentlemen, we got to get you back. This is an important discussion, and there's a lot of material that we did not get to that we need to. So we're going to have you back on at the first available opening. Folks, we also have a great program next week planned for you. Dennis Santiago and talking about risk and looking at how do you evaluate this, the tools that are out there to evaluate banks, evaluate operations, looking at this, the whole risk assessment piece is going to be what we're talking about. You're not going to miss next week's program. I had the privilege of talking to Dennis this week on a pre-program call, getting him ready to kind of tee him up for this. I want to tell you, this is not a statistician that's going to be a boring to listen to. He's going to be very, very good. Make sure to go over to LickinOnLending.com and register for updates on this program. Folks, we appreciate you being with us and listening to us each and every week. Have a great week, and we wish you the very best, and prosper out there. These are the best of times, and we're looking forward to bringing you more information next week. Pass it around. Tell others about the program. Appreciate you. Have a great week.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions.
enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.